Weather Brains.
This time on Weather Brains, a tornado may be approaching, and you are on a city bus.
Which is the worst of two evils? Do you stay on there and risk getting tossed around, or do you make a break for it and risk getting smacked by hail or worse?
We'll talk with a Dallas man who faced that situation. Plus,
what do you do with 80,000 people if there's a tornado bearing down on you?
The perils of severe weather during public events like sports competition.
The risk is extremely high.
How do you handle approaching severe weather then?
About all we can do is go to those tunnel exits and get in the interior of the stadium, under the stadium.
Plus, a plan to show Al Gore's global warming film in every school in England.
One of the parents says the film goes well beyond the consensus view and is not therefore suitable material to present to children.
Also this time, downright dry. J.B. Elliott tells us about a place that gets an average of 0.03 of an inch of rain each year.
At one time, they went 14 years in a row with not a drop of rain, not even a trace.
You'll find out where. Plus this time, a new website about climate change. And a special reason to be proud of WeatherBrains founder, James Spann. It's all coming up. It's episode number 65 of Weather Brains, the netcast that's all about weather. I'm David Black. Along with me for this ride is Kevin Selly, Brian Peters, and J.B. Elliott. Hey, Kev, how's it going?
Hey, David, how are you? I'm great. I had a great week in San Diego where we were there on one of the 5 days a year that it rains in Southern California.
Wow.
So we saw a quarter of an inch of rain in San Diego. So
how was the left coast? Had fun?
It was left, and it was fun.
Excellent. Speaking of fun, J.B. Elliott, you're always a fun guy. How's life for you, sir?
Life is good. I'm proud of life. I want to hang on to life for about another 30 years.
Tell you what, with some of the events in the news, it's a real good thing to have life these days. You don't want to take it for granted. And somebody else we shouldn't take too for granted is Brian Peters. Sometimes we take you for granted, don't we, Brian?
Everybody does. So
more like all the time.
Yeah.
Go ahead. That's all right.
And you're frequently the target of who knows what. Now, Kevin, of course, is the one who comes up with all that. I never say anything derogatory.
Oh, no. Of course not.
Someone has to play that role in the cast, and we appreciate the fact that Brian does.
Yeah.
The dunce, huh?
You're always a contributor of something interesting, and we appreciate that here in these weather shows. And people appreciate you. And people appreciate hearing about what's going on with weather around the planet. If you're going to be flying anywhere this summer, weather delays might be a bit easier to deal with. And if you've ever wished you could control the weather, who hasn't? The folks in one country may be taking a step toward being able to actually make it snow. Details on that from Kevin, who's got the weekend weather.
The weekend weather from weatherparty.com. Look for fewer weather delays during the summer thunderstorm season this year, according to the Federal Aviation Administration. They plan to expand the airspace flow program tested in the Northeast last year. The FAA says in the past, ground stops at airports would also close down chunks of airspace that would affect planes traveling only near or through weather-affected areas. New software will give airlines a choice of options to reduce delays. Listen for more on the new system in a future Weather Brains episode. Some international news. Last week, a violent tornado struck three mountain villages in central Vietnam. 21 people were injured, 13 homes collapsed, and 400 were left without roofs. Tornadoes are not uncommon in that part of the world, but a government official says this was the strongest they have seen. Soldiers from the Army are helping with cleanup and reconstruction. Also overseas, dry weather prompted the Swiss Federal Environment Office to issue a countrywide high risk of forest fires. Persistent high pressure over Western Europe has created unseasonably dry and warm conditions. Meteo Suisse, the nation's weather service, says not only has it been dry, but a number of high temperature records have fallen. And China says it has artificially created snow for the first time ever. The Meteorological Bureau in Tibet says it used a rain seeding technique to create snow over the city of Nagu. They claim to have created half an inch of snow at 15,000 feet in the mountains. The country has been aggressively trying to control weather for a number of reasons, including drought control. And back at home, the weather was really good for the nation's insurance company CEOs. Bloomberg reports that Allstate CEO Edward Liddy received a $3.73 million bonus since weather-related losses were light late last year, especially in comparison to previous years. The insurance industry says CEOs need to be rewarded for good performance at their companies. Skeptics say good performance based on weather is not good managing, just good luck. And in a related item, Allstate has been instructed by a federal jury to pay a Slidell, Louisiana man $2.8 million on damage related to Hurricane Katrina. The homeowner had claimed wind damage to his home, but Allstate said most of the damage was due to storm surge, something not covered in its policy. $2.25 million of the award was for not paying the claim quickly enough. Industry analysts say the award sends a loud message to insurers to be very careful in trying to settle with customers. Allstate says it will appeal. That's the Week in Weather. For more weather news and information, visit weatherparty.com.
Thank you very much, Kevin Sully. Speaking of weatherparty.com, one of several good websites you can access for some neato weather information, and there is a new weather website that most Weather Brains listeners, I'd bet, are going to want to check out.
This is pretty big.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see where this one goes. The new site is, here's a hint, if you can remember Weather Brains, how about remembering ClimateBrains.com. Brand new website, ClimateBrains.com, designed to provide, should I use the word rational exchange and debate about global warming and its alleged impact on the planet? Anyway, this site had been up for only hours before people started making posts to it, so I was about to, I was thinking I'd be getting on the show saying something like, gee, I wonder if anybody will notice it, if anybody will make any posts. Well, we don't need to ask that question, but climatebrains.com is already getting some action on it. So, Kev, maybe that's going to be a good forum for people, and we have gotten a lot of email here over the past few months about global warming and had a lot of interviews on the show. So maybe this is going to be a good way for people to share feelings and thoughts and exchange views.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. I wish there was some sort of filter, I guess, that you could put on the thing to at least not monitor or filter, but count the number of posts that are adding information, as opposed to, you know, how some people on these blog sites will just, you know, start yelling back and forth at each other and just doing crazy things, as opposed to extending the conversation, forwarding the conversation, or adding to it. But maybe here in the earlier days, before it gets out of control, we can monitor that. That'd be kind of an interesting experiment.
We need an intelligent post counter, but there already are some intelligent posts on there, and so I think it is going to be a popular site. And again, that's climatebrains.com. Brian, you going to be making any posts on Climate Brains? You know something? I'm going to pick on you, Brian Peters. You have been pretty quiet. Seriously now, I'm not being cute, but you've been pretty quiet during a lot of the global warming debate. I think you've made a few remarks here and there that kind of give your thoughts on it. But you kind of lay back sometimes when people are exchanging views. You don't get right in the middle of the fracas.
No.
Tell me how you really feel there. Okay, I wasn't trying to get you to get in the fracas, but I just thought it was interesting.
There's too many people in this fracas already.
Yeah.
I really think that the people who believe, this is probably going to get us some feedback, the people who believe that man is the sole cause of global warming are the biggest egotistical idiots in the world. Because, I mean, that really assumes that, you know, man is that much of an impact. First of all, I believe global warming is occurring. Second of all, I believe global warming is part of the globe, the world's normal cycle. As a matter of fact, you know, global warming back in the Middle Ages actually helped to improve weather or improve conditions because it warmed up enough and crops were able to grow. So global warming is not altogether a bad thing.
Right.
And I think one of the things that's good that's coming out of all this is that we probably do need to be careful and monitor that what we do doesn't cause a serious problem. But I think it's very egotistical to think that man is the sole cause, and I just don't think the evidence is there. So,
and see, right there, now we have somebody who can get on climatebrains.com and make a post about Brian Peters' view. And J.B. Elliott, you're pretty quiet about this, but you want to throw in anything right quick?
My views are very close to those of Brian and James.
Okay.
I believe it's a cycle situation. I really do.
Fair enough. And speaking of James, James Spann, a regular member of the Weather Brains crew, is obviously not with us for this show because, I'll give you a hint, kids, ball game. That's enough of the hint right there.
Much more important than global warming.
Global warming will always be around. The kids, the chance to be with the kids at the ball game will not always be around. Let's move on from global warming to something else that's a real big weather topic, and we talk about this one a lot on this show. When you think about your severe weather plan, and you think about it, I know you think, what would I do if I were in the house or at my office, whatever. But when you think about your severe weather plan, do you consider how you'd stay safe if a warning were issued while you were riding public transportation? It's something Dallas, Texas resident Drew Burrows admits he hadn't thought about until Friday, April 13th. It came to our attention when Burrows made a blog post on a website, and Kevin Sully talked about this during last week's Weather Brains netcast. Burrows was riding a Dallas City bus home from his job at a local bank late that afternoon when a tornado warning was issued for his area.
The siren started going off right as the bus was departing to go back to my neighborhood. There wasn't even really a dark cloud that you could see in the distance, but just all of a sudden it seemed like the sky turned kind of a dark green color, and it started raining. And then we got to about, I'd say about a mile away from where I live. The driver had his radio on, and you could hear someone saying something about tornado warnings, but I couldn't hear what county they were referring to, so I wasn't sure if it was Dallas County or one of the surrounding ones. But we got to about a mile away from home, and a female voice came over the loudspeaker, so I assumed it was like a dispatcher or something. And she said that all drivers were to stop their vehicles wherever they were and to have their passengers exit the bus and seek shelter at the wherever they could find the nearest shelter. And so I didn't really stick around to see how strictly it was being enforced, but I just kind of took off. There were only, I'd say, maybe 8 or 9 people on the bus, and pretty much everyone took off from what I could tell. We were kind of on a small side street at the time, so he just kind of pulled over to the curb and stopped about 10 seconds after she made that announcement. So nobody really stuck around to argue the point.
So at that point, you guys are on your own.
Right. And, you know, it's hard. I don't mean to fault the transit agency or anything. I'm not sure what the best, you know, action is to take in that situation, because later, the following day, they showed some footage from Fort Worth. I think an actual tornado had hit like an RV sales center of some kind, and sure enough, it had tossed those things around just like children's toys. So, you know, I'm sure there is some kind of danger involved with staying on a bus in that storm, but I don't know. It's a tough call. I'm not sure what the best option would be. So I don't really blame them. And like I said, they may have not literally kicked you off the bus, but when it's coming upon you like that, I didn't stick around to argue.
Was there shelter available where the bus stopped?
It stopped at the south end of kind of a commercial strip where there are a lot of restaurants and bars and such. Close to the southern end where we were, there are like some automotive service places and things like that, but of course they'd all closed up by that time of the day. This is around 5:30 or 6. The thing that I ducked into, the first thing I saw was it's the Dallas Tamale Factory. So there are a bunch of commercial businesses, I guess, that we could have ducked into at the time.
Was this scary for you?
Somewhat. Looking back at it, you kind of imagine that it could have been worse, but at the time, you're not really thinking about it. You're just kind of doing whatever you need to do to get out of the way.
I'm wondering how you felt, because here you are on a bus, and safety experts say you should never be in vehicles if a tornado is approaching, yet the other side of that is they're pulling over and stopping, and basically you're on your own to find shelter.
Right, and you know, you're not sure. It's kind of different from when you're watching the radar on television. You don't know what direction exactly it's coming from and if there's going to be hail coming or something like that, because that was my main reason for taking the bus. I've been in a hailstorm before, and I wanted to avoid the hassle of having to get the car repaired and such. You don't know what's coming around the corner, I guess.
Did the driver actually say anything over the bus PA after the radio message came in?
No, it all happened pretty quickly. Right after he pulled off, the doors opened and the lights came on, and everyone pretty much exited in a, you know, more or less an orderly fashion. He didn't really say anything more, and I'm not really sure if he even stayed around or if he took off as well. I'm not sure what their policy is on that. I received a call. Someone else from DART, the transit agency, had seen my blog entry that I put up for some of my friends on the internet, and contacted me and said that he just wanted to get some more details on that. And he said that his understanding was that the operator was supposed to say that all drivers were supposed to get the bus to shelter, but not necessarily make everyone get off. It could have just been a miscommunication on the dispatcher's part.
This makes me curious about what would have happened if you had been out in a very open, vulnerable area and there were no structures nearby.
Right. You'd hope, you know, that the respective drivers would exercise just their best judgment and handle it as they saw fit. It's kind of like, which is the worst of two evils? Do you stay on there and get risk getting tossed around, or do you make a break for it and risk getting smacked by hail or worse? I don't know if there's a better method to do the way that they handled it, I guess.
How would you describe this whole situation?
It was it's a tough one. It's just one of those deals to where you don't really think about it, and I don't fault DART for the way they handled it. It's got to be one of those things that people have run into before, so I'm curious myself as to what the policy would be.
That's Drew Burrows. So what is the policy of DART, Dallas Area Rapid Transit, as it pertains to passengers on buses? Well, we made several calls to DART, and we're told that Frank Jennings, DART's Vice President of Transportation, would be contacting us, but he never called. So anyway, that's kind of an interesting point. I'll bet a lot of folks don't really give that much thought. You know, what if you do have a crowded city bus and something like a tornado threatens? Crazy thought? Not really. Not in this day and age.
Yeah, that's disappointing. Sounds like you got hidied by them.
I'm not real sure what happened. We had hoped to find out. And I'm suspecting that they probably do have a policy in place. And I would think that most transit systems have that in place, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm going to continue to follow up on that because I would like to speak to them about it, especially since I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
If they decide to call, we'll be glad to put them on if they decide to call. But
be interesting to check on sports stadiums one of these days, too, and see what the general policy is on those.
Well, I know the general policy in the state of Alabama, depending on the excitement about the game, is that football takes precedence over severe weather sometimes. Hate to say that, but...
Whoops.
I just call it the way I see it, guys. Maybe somebody's going to get upset, but I hope nobody ever gets hurt in something like that. I really do.
Me too.
Yeah, the lawsuits would be quite something. Was there a policy? Do you know? I mean, does the Weather Service weigh in, Brian or JB, on things like this bus incident?
I'm not sure. I imagine the EMA office downtown would keep track of that and notify the transportation department, but I'm not sure. I know in the latter years when I was in the National Weather Service, if we had a real storm threat approaching one of the major football stadiums, we would notify the EMA office, and they handled it with the Legion Field press box and decided what to do. It was out of our hands, but we at least let them know.
I don't think, first of all, that the National Weather Service is going to weigh in on this in terms of an opinion. I think what they're going to say is that they encourage things like DART or entities like DART to have plans and to think about what they would do in the case of a tornado emergency. And I do know that in the state of Alabama, the two biggest stadiums, I think, in the state, Jordan Hare at Auburn and Brian Dennehy at, I'm sorry.
Brian Dennehy?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The stadium in Tuscaloosa at the University of Alabama, that those places do work closely with the emergency management agency in those counties, right, and that they have plans. I can't tell you what those plans are, but they do have plans, and they anticipate taking action should there be a direct threat to the stadium. Of course, you know, you're talking about a rather small target when you're talking about a stadium. However, the risk is very huge because in Tuscaloosa, I think the stadium holds, what, 80,000, 83,000, something like that? So the risk is extremely high.
Right. And it boils down to the personal choice of those in attendance. I mean, as long as the organization in charge has made the attempt to notify people of danger, that's what more can they do? I mean, it's up to people to take action.
I think, David, the issue goes well beyond what do you do with 80,000 people if there's a tornado bearing down on you? You can't evacuate them out of the stadium because you're going to put them in cars
or buses,
right, where they're gonna go, yeah.
or buses. It's a horrendous issue to think about because I don't know really what you do. I mean, I'm one who really believes in erring on the side of caution. And I would be inclined to, if there was a high risk for Central Alabama on a particular fall afternoon and you had a football game scheduled and it looked like the threat was going to be in the approximate time of the game, that you call it off before it even starts.
Yeah, but that's
about all they can do is go to those tunnel exits and get in the interior of the stadium, under the stadium. And they do that sometimes when a thunderstorm is nearby and lightning is a real threat. Can you imagine a bolt of lightning hitting right in the middle of a crowded football stadium?
That's a scary thought.
Big concern in the recent construction of these stadiums, they're especially the outdoor ones or the open-air ones, they're taking new steps to provide lightning protection to kind of channel that away from the open areas. I know I've seen that recently.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the Weather Roundtable, kind of continue this discussion. Weather Roundtable, where everybody gets to talk about weather on their minds. Let's spin the wheel, and it winds up at Mr. Selly. What you got, Kev?
Well, I was looking in checking stuff for this week in weather around the country. I got an interesting item from England where the school system, this is from the government, is going to distribute the Al Gore movie, An Inconvenient Truth, to all of the schools in the country. And some of the parents, especially in a town called New Forest, are saying, no way, hang on a second, the circulation of that film by the government amounts to what they say as political indoctrination and is in breach of their Education Act of 2002. One of the parents says the film goes well beyond the consensus view and is not therefore suitable material to present to children who need to be given clear and balanced, factually accurate information. So I'd love to hear some comment on that. They're putting that in schools, apparently.
Well, I would. I think that's amazing. And there's been some debate about that being shown in some schools in the U.S. in the Pacific Northwest. I know one person who's probably way in behind it and supporting it 100%, and that's Al Gore.
Yes, I would think so. I think that's actually a good point. That film seems to be, especially I think in the way it is produced, it seems to be trying attempting to work toward a younger audience. And I think that indoctrination word is actually pretty appropriate for the way that it tries to handle that and tries to sway their minds early on, especially given the challenges that have been given to some of the science in that movie. I think it's particularly disturbing.
Well, there's two interesting sides to that movie, and that's the observation that some of the folks we've interviewed on this netcast in the past have said. One of the people we interviewed, Dr. Robert Carter in Australia, said it called it a masterfully crafted film. I've heard other people say it is a cinema masterpiece, just in terms of the visual imagery that it shows. But then, of course, we've had more than one person in the science community on this program say, beautiful to look at, really impressive pictures, but not valid science.
Right.
So, anyway.
Kind of like Twister. Great action adventure movie, but scientifically, it's not worth a whole lot.
Well, but you had Helen Hunt in it, right?
Well, yeah, that made up for everything.
That's why some people went, anyway. J.B. Elliott.
Sorry for a minute, Brian, because that's the name of my dog. I was saying, what does Twister have to do with global warming? But anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
J.B. Elliott, what you got?
David, I've always been interested in weather extremes ever since I got into weather, even worldwide extremes. So tonight I would like to discuss a town in Chile. It's really a city of 200,000 people located at the very northern tip of Chile. And it's called Arica, A-R-I-C-A. It may be called Arica, I'm not sure, but let's for continuity call it Arica. They only get 0.03 inches of rain per year. That's not enough to even wet the pavement.
Man.
It's based on 50 years of record at the airport. And at one time, They went 14 years in a row with not a drop of rain, not even a trace, no measurable rain.
And that's normal?
And, yes. They have a population of 200,000, as I mentioned, and they do have an oasis near the city where vegetables and olives are grown, and the city itself is practically on the Pacific coast, just a few miles inland. In fact, the city has a beach. Back on August 16, 1868, that's a long way back, there was an 8.5 earthquake which occurred in the Peru-Chile Trench off the Pacific coast. The resulting tidal wave killed 25,000 people in Arica. And that time it was a part of Peru. As we all know, Chile is a long, narrow country, one of the most unusual shaped countries in the world. And in places, it's only 50 miles wide, but it's as much as 4,600 miles long. And of course, the Andes Mountain Range runs all the way up and down the South American west coast, and also along the Chile-Argentina border and the Chile-Bolivia border. It was the most interesting just a few years ago, in an El Nino year, that it rained so much in northern Chile that major flash flooding occurred in Arica. Big boulders dislodged on the mountainsides and blocked and roared down into the valley, blocking roads in the valley. Numerous roads were washed out. But overall, the story in that town in northern Chile, Arica, with a population of 200,000, is dry, dry, dry. You could forecast zero pops almost every day, and you'd have a wonderful verification record. But can you imagine only 0.03 inch per year, not enough to wet the sidewalk, and then going 14 years in a row with not a drop? And you ask, how can that happen so close to the Pacific Ocean? But remember, in the southern hemisphere, weather systems travel east to west, unlike we have in the northern hemisphere in the United States, where everything moves west to east.
So they don't get an onshore flow there, is what you're saying.
Not off of the Pacific, no.
I just don't understand how a place like Arica would not be a barren dust bowl. That's weird.
The areas surrounding the city are, but I assume they get some good water supply from out of the Andes Mountains.
Very interesting.
Okay, yeah,
I was wondering. Very interesting. Brian Peters, got anything you want to share?
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about the drought situation. Of course, the southeastern United States is experiencing a pretty significant drought, as indicated by the U.S. Drought Monitor, which is a compilation of information from NOAA, the U.S. Department of Commerce, and USDA. And in looking at our drought and our dryness here, because the Birmingham area this week went to a point where we now have a deficit of 12 inches, a foot of rain. We're behind for 2007. And what was interesting was that after all that snow in the western part of the United States, I was amazed to see that the U.S. Drought Monitor also shows a tremendous amount of drought conditions in the western, about the western 40% of the country. So a lot of the United States is actually experiencing very, very dry weather, and that just kind of falls on the heels of what JB was talking about, although I must admit I certainly would rather live in a place that has drought occasionally, like central Alabama, as opposed to 0.03 inch a year.
Yeah, well,
I would also like to add that we found out over the weekend that James Spann, the chief meteorologist for ABC 3340 and kind of one of the guys who got all this this weather brains going, was awarded the Associated Press Award for the and I don't really know the official title of the award. I don't have the email in front of me, but it was, I think, the
best weather anchor in Alabama.
Yes, that best really? Weather anchor in Alabama. So,
is that right? I didn't hear that. I didn't know that.
I thought that was a thing we should congratulate him on, but he's out with his son at a ball game tonight.
The best weather anchor in Alabama is at a ball field somewhere, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We're proud of him. And that is not the first time he's won that award.
No, I believe that it's the fifth time in 10 years.
My goodness.
He will listen to this later, so we'll congratulate him.
Yeah, Associated Press, best weather anchor in Alabama, James Spann. For folks listening to Weather Brains from outside of Alabama, and we have a lot of people who do that, you may not know that name too well. He is, as Brian said, the weather primary chief meteorologist at the ABC affiliate in Birmingham. If you were to set foot in the state of Alabama, if you live in Utah, if you live in Arizona, and you just paid a visit to Alabama, you could probably pop in a service station, grocery store, barbecue restaurant, whatever, and just say the word James Spann, and they'd say, yeah, what about him? And everybody knows him. Or you could say, you know, what's going on with the weather? And they would probably say, well, James says it's going to be so on and so forth.
Very much especially like Gary Engel in Oklahoma City.
Yep.
Yeah, especially a barbecue place.
Yeah, and James knows all the barbecue places, so it's kind of a mutual admiration type of deal. Anyway, proud of him. What may be the deadliest tornado to ever strike occurred during this week back in 1989. Bill Murray looks at that for us, and he also reflects on what happened during this week 2 years later in 1991. That's when an incredible scene that was captured on video wound up throwing tornado safety rules into a tailspin. It's all on This Week in Weather History.
Let's look back at some interesting weather history for the week of April 24th through May the 1st. Time to move. Back on April 24th, 2004, a tornado struck the town of Elsinore, Missouri. Exactly 2 years to the date after another twister had moved through the area, 8 people were injured by the second storm. And 1 year ago, on April 25th, severe Cyclone Monica spared the Darwin area as it curved into land in a sparsely populated area along the north coast of Australia. Now, the central pressure at landfall was estimated to be 879 millibars. If this estimate is correct, it would make Monica the strongest tropical cyclone ever in the southern hemisphere. Of course, reconnaissance aircraft are only used in the Atlantic, so we'll never really know for sure. Typhoon Tip, back in 1970, is still the strongest typhoon ever observed on Earth, with a central pressure of 870 millibars. Now, tornadoes were hard to capture on early cameras because of their hard-to-use glass plate negatives. The first recorded photograph of a tornado was taken back on April 26, 1884, by A.A. Adams near Garnett, Kansas. Mr. Adams reportedly sold many copies of the photo as a stereoscopic set that could be viewed with a special viewer. Adams would be remembered as the first man ever to photograph a cyclone. The weak tornado was actually dissipating as he made the picture. Back on April 26, 1989, a tornado in Bangladesh killed an estimated 1,300 people, making it possibly the deadliest tornado ever in world history. And back on April 26, 1991, a camera crew from a local television station was traveling along the Kansas Turnpike near El Dorado, Kansas, when a tornado suddenly appeared. As the twister caught up to them, they stopped and sought shelter under a highway overpass. Another family was also parked under the bridge. The television crew yelled for the people to climb up under the girders. As the crew continued to film, the tornado appeared to score a direct hit on the bridge. Now, this dramatic footage has turned out to set tornado safety back at least 10 years. Underpasses and bridges are very dangerous places to be during tornadoes and should not be used as shelters. Winds actually accelerate as they pass under bridges, and people underneath the girders are vulnerable to being sucked out by the tornado's winds. People who had sought refuge under bridges during the 1999 Oklahoma City tornado were blown hundreds of yards and killed. And another dangerous result, people now abandon their vehicles under overpasses, blocking traffic and leaving even more people in the vulnerable position of being in an automobile on an open highway. David, that's This Week in Weather History.
Thank you very much, Bill Murray. If you'd like to contact Bill, Brian, JB, Kevin, any of the weather geeks at WeatherBrains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail on our toll-free telephone line, feel free. The number is 1-888-247-8627. That's 1-888-247-8627. For the Weather Brains crew, Kevin Selle, JB Elliott, Brian Peters, I'm David Black. We do thank you for listening and hope you can join us again for our next Weather Brains netcast when who knows what may happen. Weather Brains is copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Adios. Enjoy the show, guys. Thank you guys very much.
Welcome. Hi, David. Thanks.
You're welcome.
We were all like, pretty civil. Nobody was like too wild.
That must be James's fault when that happens.
Yeah, seeing how he's at the ball game, we were just more mellow and mild this time, I guess. I don't know. Had a good
time. All right, guys, thanks.
Thank you all.
Good night.
Bye. Bye.